This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one man band. I'm the number one fan. Me and my 88.
Welcome to another episode of our podcast, Me and My 88 Friends. Tonight, we're going to replay one of my favorite episodes that we've ever played on this show, and that was episode 107, and it was called The Singer's Singer. That episode aired December 17, 2022, and I had a conversation with my friend Mark Roberts, who was one of the best singers I've ever heard. He is a great interpreter of songs. Well, that project that he had been working on for a long time is now available for the public to buy. Mark had recorded a lot of secular music over the years, but I believe this is his first Christian album, and it's wonderful, and Mark is wonderful. So I thought before we re-air episode 107, which was the original episode, I would touch base with Mark and get a little update of what's happening in his life. So let's go to a short phone conversation I had with Mark earlier this week. Hi, Mark.
Hey, what's going on?
I'm just talking to a legend right now.
Yeah. Well, let me know who that is, man. I'd like to talk to him myself.
You know, in my dreams, I wish I could sing either like Greg Allman or like you. I don't know which one, but everyone knows that you've got a fantastic gift. And now, tell me if I'm right, that your project, which was several years in the making, dropped, as they say in the business nowadays, last week, right?
Yeah, last Friday.
And
so, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like a fresh cracked egg, man. It you know, like Eric Copeland, the gentleman that owns the label that I'm under, you know, we were discussing when it was going to come out, and we had a couple of delays. And, you know, he said, well, the good thing about it, it's not like everybody's waiting for it. I mean, you know, we don't have a deadline because nobody's expecting anything.
So this is a surprise attack.
Yeah, surprise attack.
So let's go back. How long has this taken to do since you made your first trip to Nashville?
Overall, I think it's been a solid 2 years. It happened during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so Tom was free. As were a lot of producers and you know, session players, and unfortunately they were free. But that part of it worked out to be a tremendous blessing for both of us, because you know, he still had projects to work on, but he had a lot of time to work on our project. And the beautiful thing about it was he had time to embrace it.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, you know, let's get this song done, that song done, and the other song done. We had time to really get to know each other, you know, on a deeper level.
Yeah.
And he had the freedom to embrace our friendship and the project and really contribute to it in a much deeper way, which is, looking back, such a blessing.
Now, we're talking about Tom Henby.
Yeah, Tom.
Some people may not know that name, but I guarantee you they know that name in Nashville.
Oh, absolutely.
I was reading a book by the lead singer of Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in that book, there's a chapter where he said, I took some time off to go to Nashville and take guitar lessons from Tom Henby. So, I mean, the pros go to him for guitar lessons. And, of course, he's played guitar behind just a cavalcade of stars, as they would say, of in the gospel music, contemporary music, and secular music. He's played for everybody. And so this is really a great deal how that opened up for you. Tell me the name of it.
Come Alive.
Come Alive.
Mark Roberts, Come Alive.
How many songs?
10 songs.
10 songs. And hey, let me put a little plug in. Thank God for Tom Hemby that he, as the old song says, while on others thou art calling, do not pass me by. I told a friend the other day, I've celebrated Passover every year because I've been passed over for so many projects, but I'm glad that it included.
That's crazy. I like
I'm glad it included mine. And this is odd, Mark. Tell the people how old you are, if you don't mind.
64. No, I don't mind. 64.
64. And at a time when a lot of people are just hanging it up, you are walking into a season of newness and springtime. It's just a wonderful thing that the Lord has done, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's important to me to really point out that when God gives you something to use for the kingdom, he will bless it and open doors and introduce you to people that will literally be the steps for you to go to your destiny, your purpose.
Yeah, I think of that verse, Mark, that says, talking about Samuel, but also talking about Jesus, that he grew in stature and in favor of God and man. And that's what's happened to you. God has given you favor, but he's opened doors for you through people who have great influence.
Absolutely. The closer we got, he said, I want to introduce you to some people. And, you know, I made one phone call to someone else. And then they said, well, you need to talk to this one. And I made another phone call to someone else. And I started meeting all of these people. And then it was not like this was planned or Tom didn't like, here, okay, I want you to meet this one next. This was absolutely God's hand in every bit of this, of how I met these people, and in a fascinating order. I can't say enough about the people that God has introduced me to. And all I ever asked him was, I remember the prayer, God, take me away from everyone that I need to be away from, and please put me around the people I need to be around.
And so I want to play just an excerpt of the title cut of this album. Do you still call them albums, Mark?
I think so. For those of us that are just hanging on.
Okay. This project, maybe we'll say project. Yeah. But this is Come Alive, and this is the title cut. Now, that song has a video that goes with it, too, right?
Yeah.
So tell me again where people can see this video and where they can purchase streaming or the CD.
If you want to go to YouTube, you put in Mark Roberts Alive search, okay?
In the search bar,
Mark Roberts Alive, and it'll bring up everything. It'll bring up the video. If you go to Spotify and do the same thing, you get all of the same thing. Mark Roberts Alive in the search bar. Okay. And if you want to go to Amazon, Mark Roberts Alive in the search bar for Amazon, and it'll bring it up in Amazon.
Is there any other song you'd like us to play a little excerpt as we leave you and go to the walk down memory lane to last summer?
There's a song called Fall Apart that Natalie Hemby wrote, and I think it's just incredible. And that song is important. It's important for the awakening of the responsibility that we have as the body of Christ.
Yeah. Well, great. So that's Fall Apart And the album is Come Alive, and it's a good album. It's really good. It's good talking to you, Mark. So I'll talk to you later.
Always a pleasure, brother. Thank you.
Great. I do want to put a little plug in before we go back to that original interview with Mark Roberts about a concert that my band and I are going to be doing November 19th at Abundant Life Church here in Florence, South Carolina. We're doing a special concert where we go through the life of Jesus. It's a soundtrack of Jesus' life, basically. And we've been working on it all year, and it's a very moving time when you just take a look at Jesus. All these songs have been songs that the Lord has given me over the last 53 years. So that's going to be November 19th at Abundant Life Church, 3030 South Irby, that's I-R-B-Y, South Irby Street, Florence, South Carolina. It starts at 6, and it's free, and I hope you'll spread the word, and I hope we'll have a big crowd, because it's going to be a wonderful night just to gaze at Jesus. Now, let's go back to episode 107, my original interview with Mark Roberts.
just as long as I have you, I'll get through. Precious Jesus, precious Jesus, I can't live without you. I can't last a single day without you. Just as long as I have you, I'll get through.
Welcome to episode 107 of Me and My 88 Friends. What you just heard was the song I'll Get Through, which is a song that Damascus Road, my wonderful band, and I did together a couple of weeks ago. My guest on the show today is a great friend and a great singer, Mark Roberts. Mark is going to share about his journey in music and his journey with the Lord. So welcome to the show. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host.
Well, thank you, Lawrence. This has been a while coming.
Yes, it has. Now, I want to say something about you, Mark, before, just to set this up, to tell my crowd. We're talking to a creme de la creme singer. Mark is he's a great singer. Now, I'm a singer. But if we were cars, I would probably be, if we were General Motors, I would be a Chevrolet.
I can't wait to hear this.
I'd be a Chevrolet and probably a Bel Air. I don't know if they make Bel Airs anymore, but back in my day, it was the Biscayne. That was really the poor man's Chevrolet. Bel Air was a little bit better, but Impala was better. I'm not an Impala. I'm maybe a Bel Air. I'm adequate, if that. But you would be a Cadillac Coupe de Ville.
Well, let me just add to that, that particular analogy needs to be followed up with the fact that a Bel Air is a far more expensive car and great car because it's a classic versus the Cadillac. Okay. So, yeah, I'll take that.
Well, I'm getting old enough to be.
No, I would rather be a Bel Air than a Cadillac. So, a classic. So, I appreciate the compliment. Thank you so much.
Mark is from Georgetown, South Carolina. We're sitting here in his kitchen. And Georgetown is between Charleston and Myrtle Beach.
Yep.
And
the best place to be.
Yeah.
You don't want to be in either one of those places. You want
That's
to be
right.
near them, right?
And Mark, you were telling me that you used to work at a music store here in town.
I did.
And a very famous kid who became very famous used to come in that record store. You want to tell us who your client used to be?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, he wasn't my client, but I don't know how often he showed up. But Chris Rock was a kid in the neighborhood, back then.
Yeah.
And
but he would come into your store.
He was around, and some of the other people in the amusement company knew him a whole lot better than I did. I really wasn't ever formally introduced, but.
But you said he was loud, right?
Yeah, well, he was, just a kid. He was a 12-year-old, 11-year-old kid, whatever. So he was, they were noisy, and they were, they were doing what they do. Everything I did when I was 12 and everything my 12-year-old does now. But, he was a Georgetown boy.
Yep. Now, you told me, Mark, that one of my favorite singers, I was so impressed when I walked in here today and you showed me some of your photos on the wall. You actually were friends with the great Percy Sledge, right?
Yeah.
And you told me you met him in a dressing room?
Yeah. It was we played at a big ball field in Wilmington, North Carolina. And we were the backup band. I was in a band, and I was a second singer in a band. And I also kind of doubled as a stage manager to make sure everything was set up right for the big guy, you know, the star of the show. We were the backup singers and the band for Percy. He was doing a show there in Wilmington. And I went into the locker room just to establish a place for me to be whenever we were taking a break or what have you. And I walked around the corner, and lo and behold, there was Percy Sledge sitting on a bench in there, straddled the bench, you know, just sitting there. And he looked up and says, "Hey, young man." And we entered into about an hour and a half conversation where he told me, you know, the real story about how When a Man Loves a Woman was written, how it was written to begin with. It was actually When a Woman Loves a Man. And told me the story of the DJ that helped him out, the radio DJ that helped him basically write the song and get it to where it was. Told him he thought it would be a hit. I guess he was right.
And it was about a girl he was in love with, and the family didn't care for him, and they sent him off to live with a cousin, and he was thinking about her. And when a woman loves a man, and the DJ told him to change,
switch it around.
Switch it around.
So it started out when a woman loves a man, and the DJ said, you know, these are your feelings you're talking about, so maybe you should sing it from your standpoint when a man loves a woman. And he says, "Yeah, I get that, and I think I can add another verse to it." So, and that was a very interesting story.
That went to number one, but I think it's maybe a bigger song now than it even was. It came out when I was in high school.
What tickled me is when he was telling me the story about the song, and you know, he's just real guy, just a real person, you know, untainted by his monstrous popularity. He said, you know, this young fella came along after years of that song being out there, and he really helped me out a lot. And he said, that long-haired young fella. And I said, who are you talking about? And he says, that, you know, Michael Bolton. I was like, oh, yeah, okay. I guess he did help you a lot.
Yeah, he sure did.
Yeah, he was really impressed with Michael Bolton.
I want to talk about basically three things today. I want to talk about your secular career for just a few minutes. Most important, your journey with Jesus,
yes.
And then what God's doing now. So, obviously, you're a great singer. You're never off key. You've got the great. I mean, you're really. I'm a great admirer. Put it that way.
Well, thank you so much.
When did you know you could sing? How old were you when you began to think, well, maybe I can?
Well, I was trying to sing when I was about 4 and 5 in front of the television set while Mom and Dad were watching the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yeah.
And I used to turn around and watch them sing. And whenever they were through singing, whoever was singing or whatever they were doing, I would turn around and face Mom and Dad and bow. my dad thought it was cute the first couple of times, but if he couldn't see the Ed Sullivan Show, it wasn't funny anymore.
So when's the first time you ever sang in public?
First time I sang in public was with my brother. My brother gave his life to Christ when he was 19 or 20 years old. And he started playing in some coffee houses in Florence, South Carolina.
Really?
Yeah, there was a coffee house. I cannot remember the name of it. But there was a curio shop on, what's the road going from town to the mall, straight to the mall?
Evans Street, maybe?
Evans Street. And we went in and sang Teach Your Children.
Yeah, yeah.
Crosby, Stills, Nash. Yeah. And I did the harmony with my brother for the first time. He said, come on, get up on stage with me, because I'd sing it with him at home. And that was all fine at home.
But how old were you?
Oh, I was, I think, eight years old. Yeah.
8 years old.
Yeah. And I loved it. I loved being in that chair and singing and looking at people that were looking back. And it was magical. You know, it was magical.
I think what most people that I talk to, I mentioned Mark Roberts. Mm-hmm. They remember you as being a beach music singer.
That got me airplay.
Can you explain to my audience that's living in Massachusetts or Indiana
what beach music is?
Beach music is huge in certain states. It's huge. Yeah.
It's not the Beach Boys. Not California surf music.
It called Carolina Beach Music?
It's Carolina Beach Music, yeah.
And so South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia,
yeah,
kind of up and down the East Coast. I found out there are some people.
There's a few. There's a dance called the Shag. You know, there was a jitterbug, and then there in the South, there was the Shag dance.
And that's a dirty word in England. I went to England, and I used that term, and I was told right there, you don't say that in public. It means
I told a different. British guy that I worked with, I said, now we play Shag music. He said, really, really? I want to hear it. No, I've got to hear that. Anyway.
Yeah, there's even a movie about called The Shag, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, about this dance.
There's a book, there's a movie, and the first volume of The Shag, you know, the Southern Shag was, I actually had a little piece in that first volume.
Really?
It might have been in the second volume. I don't know. I didn't read it. But I mean, all of us, you know, that were in all of the beach bands that were getting radio play and doing, you know, having recording songs that people were dancing to and like to dance to. And it's a specific meter, you know, like 108 to 120. You've got that meter in a song that people can shag to or will shag to or will want to shag to. Yep. And it's a beat. It's a 1/4 beat. If it's got a double kick in there, you don't have a shag song.
Yeah, you're right. It's got to have that little groove.
Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. You know, and you got to get it in the right tempo. And a song is what's funny is I had recorded a song called Dixie Moon. And originally recorded by Ray Charles. And at the time I re-recorded that song, I was the only other person to record that song other than Ray Charles. Probably not one of his most popular songs, but it was an extremely popular beach music song. Kind of really put me on the map in beach music. And somebody asked me, he said, you know, do you want to sing this song? And I said, not really. Because I was, you know, so rock oriented.
Yeah.
And so, you know, talking about beach music and what beach music is it is music that will fit the criteria of the groove you need to shag dance, to be able to do that dance.
So it's really a dance?
It's a dance.
A dance form of music.
And the music needs to fit that dance. And if it doesn't, they won't buy it, they won't play it, and they won't like your band.
I just want to hear, you sang this to me earlier. Who was it that wanted you to sing a falsetto? I can't sing falsetto. I did it one time on a record, and it's a joke. People laugh. I mean, you know, most people are like, wow, people laugh when I do it. But what was it? The Spinner song? What was the song you...
Hey There, Lonely Girl?
Yeah.
That was Eddie Holman. And, I was...
Let me hear Hey There, Lonely Girl.
Well, I recorded Hey There, Lonely Girl, but I didn't want to. I had no desire to sing falsetto for anybody, anytime, anywhere. Didn't mind going into falsetto, like, for a song like Dust in the Wind. You know, that singer went into...
Who was a Christian now, too.
Yeah, he went into a falsetto part. Yeah. In parts of the song.
Yeah.
And as he grew older, he would do that a lot and actually dialing the song up. But I was walking down the hall. We were recording an album for a gentleman that I used to do some work with. And he was working on an album. We were in his band and I was walking down the hall. And I was just messing around. You know, I was always doing something, singing something stupid, singing on commercials like Jolly Green Giant. You know, I mean, I was always doing something.
Yeah.
Sang a lot of commercial songs. Hot dogs, armor, hot dogs. Yeah, I love that stuff. So I'm going down the hallway and I'm thinking, I don't know why it hit me, but I went, "Hey, that lonely girl." And the guy that we were doing his album, he stuck his head out the control room door. All I saw was his head. He said, "Can you sing that song?" I went, "Yeah, but I don't want to." And he said, "Man, if you could sing that song, oh, man, it would just be a huge hit." I said, "It already was a hit." He said, "But I mean in the beach music market." I said, "Well, okay, that's fine and well." I said, "Maybe so you find."
Did they put it out on the radio?
Yeah, that was, man, I won, like I got number one, I don't know, three or four times in a row on their on the 94.6 or 90, yeah, 94.9, the surf That's radio.
Big beach music.
Yeah, but, I got like number one several times, yeah. And I won a Cammy Award for Smoothie Song of the Year. That's what it was
Smoothie
called.
Smoothie Song.
You're listening to a podcast called Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. We've been having a conversation with Mark Roberts, who was a very popular beach music singer and walked away from it all a few years ago to get close to God and to concentrate on being a father. We've been talking about his secular career, and we're going to move in now to his journey of faith with being a follower of Jesus. Did you come to Christ as a little boy, a child?
14.
14. You really did well in beach music. I remember you told me, was it Virginia Beach or somewhere you were, there were thousands of people there.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, you weren't just singing to a,
well, it was
a little nightclub here and a nightclub there. There were sometimes you sang at big festivals, right?
Yeah, big festivals. I mean, there's a music festival in Virginia Beach, right on the beach, right on the beach.
So you came to the Lord at 14.
Yeah.
And then you became very successful in the music.
And years later.
Yeah. And
I sang in church back then.
And now you told me, and now people who listen to this show come from all different denominations and beliefs. So when you say the word prophet, some people go, "Oh, what was he talking about?" We're not talking about an Old Testament Bible writer prophet, but somebody who had a prophetic gift, somebody who had a word for you that you were going to go through a rocky road. Is that, do I have that right?
Yeah, I was 15 years old, and my mother and a friend of hers, they would travel around from church to church. We were in Oklahoma. We lived in Oklahoma, but we would go to Texas, and we would find out that different teachers during that time, not necessarily evangelist or shout, holy roller, that kind of preacher thing, but teachers that had books out, had videos out, had tapes out, would be making appearances. And Mom was on, you know, she was on the trail of finding out everything she could find out about God and the Word and learning as much as she could possibly learn. She put her mind and heart into it. And, you know, my mother was an alcoholic for 13 years. God healed her in one day. She no longer was an alcoholic. And everybody knew this, everybody around us and everybody in the family. So Mom gave her life to God. So this was her pursuit to find out everything she could find out about Him and anything she could learn. She gave her life to that.
Yeah.
And so I was, I had given my life, my heart to God at 14, from a different standpoint. Didn't have anything to do with my mom or what she did. I wasn't following her footsteps. This was an entirely different thing. And so during this, you know, her journey and my journey, I had asked God about different things that I wanted in my life, which is another story in and of itself. That's unbelievable today, how I ended up where I'm at right now. But I asked God to allow me to do certain things. And I wanted to do certain things for Him. I wanted to work for Him, and I wanted to sing for Him. I wanted to write music and sing music that would heal, that would help, that would let people know they're not alone. And that anything, healing, number one, just, Lord, help me be able to do that. And I didn't want to do it in the four walls of the church. I wanted to do it for the world. I wanted to do it for people everywhere, not just a group, not a members only kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we went to this church in South Texas, and this gentleman was, remember, he was a tall gentleman, and he was teaching. He wasn't preaching. He was teaching,
yeah.
fervently teaching the Word of God, going over these scriptures over and over again, making sure that everybody got it. And he was tying them all together, New Testament, Old Testament, Old Testament, New Testament, just wrapping this whole thing up, showing how the New Testament was basically in so many ways repeating the Old Testament in different ways and how this all tied together and the lessons of that. And he looked at me, stopped dead in his tracks and looked at me. And I'm looking around to make sure he was looking at me. And then he did that. On the third time that he did that, he put his Bible down and walked back there down the aisle. Now, the interesting thing about this is, in the churches that I had been going to, it was not unusual to hear someone say, "And thus saith the Lord," and they would be speaking out to the whole church to one person.
Yeah.
And for some reason, for me, I had asked God, I said, "God, would you please, when you have something to tell me, could you just tell me, you know, just me, so I could know that it's from you." And this guy walked down the aisle. He called me out. I was in the middle of the pew. There was 250 people in there. And he called me out into the aisle. And I was nervous. My lips were sticking to my teeth, and I didn't have any moisture in my mouth. I was, you know, just real nervous. And I looked around. He said, "Yeah, you with the long blonde hair, come on out here." And I walked out there, and he was whispering. He said, "Son, God wanted me to let you know," whispering in my ear. Nobody could hear. He said, "God wanted me to let you know that this is just for you."
There's an answer to one, okay, to one
so,
prayer.
My ears went straight up, and I was acutely listening and listening to what he said. He said, "You're going to go down a long, hard, rocky road, a lot of jagged edges. You're going to think that God has forgotten you completely. But no, when you're thinking that is when he's with you the most. And at the end of that rocky road, whew, he's going to grant you the desires of your heart." And I think about that all the time, and the desires of my heart from then to now have not changed in that respect, has not changed.
Yeah.
Along the path, when I was tired of waiting on God to, I guess, get me in music for him and get me in a band for him or somehow sign me up, you know, with a record company for him, however that was going to work, my impatientness led to, even though God had my heart, I took my life back. Right. And I said, "God, I'm going to do this myself. I can do this myself." I just figured I could make something happen. I tried to get in with a couple of Christian bands that were in the area, but there was a multitude of reasons why they told me I couldn't be a part of that. I don't understand. What I didn't know then was, I was not trusting God. I was not asking God to guide me and lead me. So everything I tried to do, there was a roadblock. And it's simply not what God wanted me to do. And so then I went even further. And I just, when I moved from that area, I started looking for a rock band. And in the beginning, some of the guys said, "Well, man, you know, your voice is too clean to be a rock and roll singer." And I said, "Well, I can do stuff you don't know about.
Dirty it up."
So I dirtied it all the way up. And, so, you know, then I started doing things that some of the other singers around weren't able to do, and screaming real high and doing a bunch of different stuff. And so I became a popular singer in the rock, you know, in the local area of Wilmington and that part of North Carolina. So was with several different bands that we formed and, excuse me, got together with a group of guys with Heart and Soul, a band called Heart and Soul. Good group of guys. And as we were traveling around, even with those guys, people would, people would come up to me. There were random people coming up to me saying, you know, what are you running from? And they didn't know me. I didn't know them. I'd never seen them before in my life. I said, what do you mean? I'm not running from anything. I'm running away from you. And, you know, and I would go on about my business. And that happened to me enough times to where it started getting creepy for me. I was like, okay, all right, what's going on here? So I had enough biblical training through the years, early years of my life, to where I was sensing something spiritual, but I didn't want to admit that. I didn't want to fall into that. I did not want to surrender to that. So when I was fired from that band, I was just didn't know what I was going to do. And I got in touch with a band member who was also fired from his band. And his band was a real, real popular band, way on top, and a national band. And I was, of course, fired from a local band. And so we kind of had something in common. And I kept trying to call him and kept trying to call him and kept trying to call him, leaving messages until finally his wife called me back and says, call him back next Thursday at 7:30. He'll be on his second glass of wine and he'll be able to listen to you then. And so I called him and anyway, got with his band and went through the years of becoming somewhat popular in beach music. And then I quit that band and went with another band, which was a different experience, and I'll leave it at that. That lasted not quite a year. And then I was on my own. I started my own band. Well, while I was doing my own band, while I was building that and really putting a lot of effort into it, mom and dad came and saw me for the first time. My dad realized, hey, you know, this, maybe you were born to do this, and started really helping me. Well, during that same time, more and more, when I had my band, people were coming up to me. One couple came up to me, and this is when we were playing at that big show in Virginia, coming off one of the times, coming off the catwalk. There's 60,000 people there, and I'm coming off the catwalk, and this couple walked up to me, and they were just as sweet as they could be. They both put their hands on me and said, can we pray with you? Do you realize you're anointed? And I said, well, okay. Okay, thank you. You know, and it struck me hard, because in my heart, I loved God. And I always tried to share that, you know, people, we were put here to help each other. Reach out and tell somebody you love them and thank God for the beautiful day. And I would pick certain songs like Stand By Me, and I would turn that into my tribute to, we got to love one another like God says for us to do, and mm-hmm. and all this. And I would even, don't stop believing the good things in life. Don't stop believing what God can do for you, you know, and don't stop believing in yourself, and don't stop believing that you have things inside you that you need to find, and God will help you find them. And all of the stuff I was trying to do was my effort to stay somehow connected to God, but I wasn't willing to give it all to him.
Okay, let me ask you a question. I know that you came to a point where you walked away from it all.
Yeah.
Right? And you sort of felt like you would maybe never sing again. Is that right?
I had made that choice. I had made the same choice that I made when I said, God, you go your way and I'm going to go mine. I'm going to sing because that's what I feel like I'm supposed to do. And it ain't happening enough for me on this side over here. So I'm going to go on that side and see how quick it can happen. That same determination that I had there was the same determination when I had been visited by so many people that said, you're running, or you're supposed to be doing this for God. You know, this is you're supposed to be doing this kind of music. You're supposed to be singing for the Lord. Even a hairdresser said, well, Mark, I don't want to be forward, but God's telling me that he wants you to sing for him. And I'm like, oh, wow.
Yeah, Lord, I tried that and you didn't help me.
Some things were going on in that music world. And it just, the wall started closing in. And I went home one night and I fell on my face and I asked God, I said, please help me. Please forgive me. Please help me. Please take me back. I felt like God was gone, just like the guy told me I would feel.
When you were 15 years old.
I felt like he was
gone. And how old were you at this point?
Oh, God, I was 48 or so, or no, 50-some, 50-some. I mean, ragged. I was worn out.
So you had gone through the rocky road, the jagged edges, and the end of that said that you would, God would come through and give you the...
So 3 years from that time, I threw my face on the floor, literally got down on the floor, laid face down, and just cried. I was by myself in the house. My wife at the time and my little boy were away at the campground, and I was, you know, playing music. And from that prayer, a lot more things fell apart from that prayer.
Yeah.
I mean, life just, my mom died, my dad died, my mom died, my wife left me. I didn't want to do anything. I called the guys and I said, y'all need to find something else to do because I'm done. And they didn't believe me. They thought I was just having a bad day. I started canceling jobs. I canceled, close to 200 jobs in no time, over the weekend.
You just kind of laid low and started power washing.
I laid so low, people thought I was dead.
Yeah, yeah. And you started a power washing business.
Yeah.
And, during that time, though, this time of being away from everything, was there a point where God started really renewing you, even though everything was falling apart? Was there like a turning point where...
No, that was a turning point. You know, I always say I went from the spotlight to the sunlight. I went from the spotlight to God's light, which is a lot brighter and a lot warmer.
I'm running home where your love's been all along. So me is 1 million tears. I've been searching for the truth. And everyone in half my toes just led me back to you.
I had already shut down the band and really, I did not think. Now, I hid all of this from my son. My son did not see any of this going on inside me. I had inherited my mom and dad's house and I was building that. And we were living in a camper in the driveway while I was doing that. And he was loving living in a camper. It was kind of an exciting thing for him. He was, seven at that time. And when I didn't have him one weekend, I went, a friend of mine called me, a girl who cut my hair, and she said, I want you to come to church with me. I want you to go to church, Mark. You need to come to church. You need to let God help you with this. And she had always had scripture when I went in to get my hair cut. She had always had she even told me, she said, God wants you to sing for him. This was years ago. Mm-hmm. And, I went to church with her, and I sat there, and as soon as I got in that building, I knew something was different with that place. And it was different. And, but I was very upset. I mean, I was just had tears in my eyes the whole time on the way to church, at church, coming home from church that day, that night, my eyes were always red. I didn't think I'd ever feel any joy in my life again, ever. I didn't think I'd ever feel that slapstick happy that you feel sometimes. I just never thought I'd feel it. And, the pastor there, he's a true teacher. He's a true man of God. He's a true teacher. And I've been around enough of them to know that some of them are show and some of them are the real shining light of God. And this was the shining light of God. He is a man of God. And he came over to me and he said a few words that, not boldly telling everybody in the church, but just talking to me. And he told me what he saw in me and wanted me to know that I'm welcome with open arms there. And without going into details, from that day forward, I kept going back to that church. And about a year later, I got involved with a discipleship group. Intense discipleship group. And it brings out all the stuff inside you that you don't realize is all down in there. It just all comes to the surface. It's like purifying gold, you know. Just all that dross that comes to the top, just like it talks about in the Word. And I just, during that time, I came home one night after one afternoon after the meeting on Sunday. And that night I was just restless and I just wanted God to help me. I could not hear God. I so badly wanted to hear him. And I opened my Bible on the desk in that room in there and I put my face right down in the crease of the pages. And I started praying and I said, God, teach me how to hear your voice. Please teach me how to see you in the middle of all this junk that's going on. You know, teach me, Father, teach me. Please teach me. Teach me how to walk with you alone. Show me the path that you've made for me. Help me to get on that path. I can feel it, but I can't see it. I know that it's there, but I know I'm not in it. I want to get in the middle of it. I want to be there. Teach me how to do this, God. And I did not realize that prayer was, because I had told God 3 years, you know, whatever period of time we're talking about now, roughly crawling into 2 years there, that I did not want to have anything to do with music. I'm giving it all back. I don't want to have anything else to do with music or songwriting or playing guitar or anything. I'm giving it back to you, God. I did not know how to treat it. I mistreated it. So here it is. I'm sorry. Boom. I'm done. I stood in front of those windows in my kitchen and for the first time in my life, I was very happy and at so much peace with just being my son's daddy. And it felt like a 20,000 pounds had been lifted off of me. I didn't have to worry about any of that junk anymore. I didn't have to worry about it anymore. I didn't have to think about it. All I had to do was just be his daddy.
Yeah.
And, what greater job have you got than to be somebody's daddy and to love someone that much and to care for them? And God said to me, and this is when I heard him, he said, this is how I love you, right here. This is how I see you. This is how I love you. I am just happy being your daddy, being your father.
Wow, what a great word.
Whew, man. And then I realized how much my daddy loved me.
Yeah.
How much I loved my son. And how much God loved me. And I was right in the middle of all that. And so for the first time, days later, I picked up my guitar, had not played anything. And I'm not a player. I play enough to write my songs. I play my mark chords. I can't mess my mark chords up. Somebody says, that doesn't sound right. I'll say, that's because it's a mark chord. I had prayed that prayer.
Teach me.
And I wrote it down. And I shared it with a mutual friend of mine and yours, Frank Mills. And he said, Mark, well, let's come to my house. Let's do a number chart on it. Let's get this thing worked out, man. He's a bundle of music musical energy.
Now, you have a guitar in your hand. Could you play maybe one verse of that song? And maybe we'll play something off your album if we get permission.
teach me how to hear your voice over all the noise, over everything that tears me down. Teach me how to see your face in every storm, in everything designed to turn me around. Teach me, Lord. Teach me how to slow my mind and walk with you alone along the path you've chosen for your child. Step I take and hold me in your arms, changing my mind all the while.
You've been listening to an excerpt of a song called Teach Me by our guest, Mark Roberts. This is included in a brand new record that Mark has made called Come Alive. It's a Christian record. Mark has been a singer for all of his life, but this is the first Christian record he's done, something he wanted to do as a teenager. It's a wonderful record produced by Tom Henby in Nashville. Tom Henby is a legendary guitar player and producer who has played on many, many secular and Christian records. So let's go back to the conversation that Mark and I had in July of 2022 as we talked about this great new record that is going to be released in February 2023.
I feel so honored, Mark, that one of my songs is going to be on that record.
Yeah.
And I'm just so thrilled. I just thank you so much for...
Well, how that came when Frank called me and he said, look, I want you to meet this guy, Lawrence Tuning. He lives in Florence, South Carolina. He's written this and he wrote that. And I went, wow, really? He said, yeah. And he said, hang on, somebody's at the door. I was on the phone with him when you knocked on his door to give him, you happened to be in his neighborhood.
Yes, yes.
And you gave him that demo of your song. And so then he sent it to me, or you sent it to me, emailed it to me. Well, I was on my way.
Yeah, he said it
later.
He asked me, could I send it to you?
Yeah, I didn't get it until I was on my way to Nashville, and I was going through Pigeon Forge. And here's the neat part about this is this happened right about a time is okay. I'm in my 60s, and I've been playing music all my life, and I've been on the road and slept in a bus and, you know, cleaned up in some of the nicest and nastiest bathrooms in 10 states and abroad. And, you know, and all that's good and fine and well. But I look in the mirror and I go, wow, what am I even thinking? What am I thinking? What is going to possibly happen to, you know, what am I thinking? Some doors are opening, but yes, what am I thinking? Of course, God reminded me of Abraham.
Yeah.
You know, the promise he made to him and his wife and all of this. And the whole thing was, I was in a state of feeling like my time has passed. It's too late for me to get excited about this or even really put my energy into going forward and thinking and letting myself even imagine, you know, what are the possibilities? What could happen? Could I end up being able to share this music and stand in front of people and look at them from a different perspective, from God's heart, not my heart? Okay.
Right.
And you sent this song, and the name of the song is Starting Over Again. It's not too late to start over again.
Wow. I didn't know that. I didn't realize.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is when it hit. I wasn't sure that you did know that. And that's when it hit. I know I'm listening to this song in the parking lot of the Axe House in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, bawling my eyes out because it's not too late to start over again. You know, I had a chance, but I didn't take it. I had a choice, but I didn't make it. I mean, that is my life. That's my life. That's what I did with my life. And then it goes on to say, but it's not too late. It's not too late, man. Amen. Don't even think this way. How many people need to hear that? How many people think it's too late for them to do anything else in their life?
I'm praying that a lot of people will hear you do it. And by the way, that song, I don't co-write. But I did some songs with Ray Bolts, but what that consisted of was me sending him a rough draft and him tweaking it. But my pastor called, Carl Morris, and he said, I've got two lines, and I just want to share them with you. And I thought, oh, here we go again, because people always send me things, and I never can come up with tunes to co-write. So he said, just put it on a shelf, throw it away, but I want to tell it to you. And it was those first two lines that you quoted. I had a chance.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, within 3 days, which is most songs take me a long time to write. Within 3 days, we had that song.
And, wow.
And then you now are going to record it with a top-notch producer and musicians and backup singers. And we're going to play this now, your recorded version, as we end this show.
I had a chance, but I didn't take it. I had a choice, but I didn't make it. I live with regret, and I just can't shake it. But it's not too late to start over again. I had a future that I went and shattered, and I had hopes that somehow got scattered. I sinned and I lost the one thing that mattered. But it's not too late to start over again. And I know I can't replace the past with things that might have been. And there's only one thing left for me to heal this heart again. Sweet forgiveness, the kind that frees us one by one. I'll pick up the pieces, I'll gather them up and take them to Jesus. Oh, it's not too late to start over again. And I know replace the past with things that might have been. And there's only one thing left for me to heal this heart again. Sweet forgiveness, the kind that frees us one by one. I'll pick up the pieces, I'll gather them up and take them to Jesus. Oh, it's not too late to start over again. Broken pieces, I will take them to Jesus. Told me it's not too late to start over again. It's not too late to start over again. again.
My 88 friends, I will sing you a song.